Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
From the Society for Nautical Research, in partnership with Lloyd's Register Foundation, I'm Sam Willis, and this is the Mariner's Mirror podcast, the world's number one podcast dedicated to all of maritime history. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mariner's Mirror podcast. Today, we bring you a three-part special inspired by the anniversary of the Battle of Trafalgar of 1805, which, of course, falls in October each year. If you are interested in Horatio Nelson and the Battle of Trafalgar, then do please go back into our back catalogue, hunt through it, and you'll find several fascinating episodes. There are eyewitness accounts of the battle, a special episode looking in particular at Nelson's wounds, which is very gory and absolutely extraordinary, and a lovely little episode on HMS Pickle, the vessel that raced back to England with news of Nelson's great victory. Now, I'm lucky enough to have visited HMS Victory down in Portsmouth on several, perhaps many is a better word, occasions. It truly is a remarkable place, and I've always been most impressed with the wonderful tour guides they have there. They are hugely knowledgeable, entertaining, and always extremely good company. One of their team, the brilliant Tony Noon, got in touch with me over the summer to show me a copy of the Trafalgar Times, a quarterly newsletter on all things relating to Nelson and the sailing navy that he and others have produced at Portsmouth. I was so impressed that I cooked up a plan to bring you an audio tour of HMS Victory, which starts today. First, a little background. Best known for her role in the Battle of Trafalgar in 1805, in which Horatio Nelson died, the Victory now has a dual role as the flagship of the First Sea Lord and as a living museum to the Georgian Navy. Now, to give you some sense of the visitor experience of HMS Victory, we're going on a tour. This special will be divided into three episodes. The first will look at the lowest two decks, the hold and the orlop deck, both below the waterline. The second episode will look at the gun decks, where the sailors lived and fought Victory's 104 guns. And episode three will look at everything open to the elements, the weather deck, the quarter deck, the poop deck and the forecastle. The tour guide Tony Noon will be taking us around, but with us also came Rosie Thornber, Principal Heritage Advisor for HMS Victory, who kept us up to date on the phenomenal conservation project that they currently have underway, a once-in-a-lifetime project with an army, well, I should say navy, of craftsmen, conservators, engineers and shipwrights who are working to fight the impact of moisture, fungus and pests that threaten her and to keep her safe for the next 50 years. So please come on board and join myself, Tony and Rosie in the dark hold of HMS Victory.
Um, So, Tony, here we are in the... well, tell us, what deck are we on? It's certainly dark and it's quite smelly.
So we're in the hold now of HMS Victory. We're actually standing on a walkway that's been put in for the general public, so this walkway wouldn't have been here. And it's essentially all the supplies and the stores for the ship are stored down here. You've got a sample of section of barrels here on towards the fore end of the ship. These barrels will actually come all the way across to the sides of the ship and pretty much up to head height. Where we're standing, we've probably got about 6 feet above us, and there's about another 20 feet below us. So there's 21 foot of storage space in this section alone. And these barrels, everything you need for 6 to 8 months supplies at sea. So 60 tons of salted beef, 60 tons of salted pork, 300 or so tons of water. You're looking at 11,000 gallons of beer down here. And then, of course, everything else you need to keep a ship fighting and seaworthy.
Yeah, and these barrels are all in, they're different sizes, aren't they? There's a, I suppose, it's a small mountain of barrels for those who can't see them. So different size, were they used for different different objects?
Yes, so water, beer, and then they get in your salted beef and your salted pork, and we'd also store paint down here in the aft hold, because you still need to keep the ship looking nice, but also paint is protective for the wood as well.
Yeah, and so we've got some... gravel here as well. Is that part of it? Would that be in the ballast?
So we've got two sections of ballast. So if we're looking down into the hold, there's a section completely exposed to the floor of the hold, and we can see there's actually some black iron bars about a foot long, and that's just cheap pig iron, and there's 257 tons of pig iron that run along the length of the keel. That corresponds to the weight of the guns above pretty much, but it also helps correct the list of Victory. So when Victory was launched, she had a list to one side. So this pig iron helps to counteract the list, the natural list of the ship. And then over the top of that, we have another 200 tons of shingle, which again is ballast. So if the ship's leaning a bit, just a little bit to the left or the right, you need to trim the ship. You can then just take bucketfuls of the ballast of the shingle and move it to where you need to balance the ship correctly. But the second point of the ballast, because of all the barrels and all the stores you have down here, if you don't have the barrels bedded into something, they're going to roll through the ship in rough weather, etc. So you can actually bed the barrels, the bottom layer of barrels, halfway up into the shingle, and you're building almost like pyramids of barrels on top of each other, layer by layer by layer, coming up all the way pretty much to the deck head or the ceiling above us here.
Amazing stuff. And how far down below the waterline are we here?
So we're only a few feet ourselves below the waterline, but there's actually 28 feet of ship all the way from the waterline to the very bottom of the false keel underneath. So it's just over 28 feet draft in total. So all of this whole supplies, this cavernous space that you're looking at, would have been completely filled with supplies, and it's all underwater. Yeah. We also have our shot lockers down here. There are two shot lockers. It's like a large bin with flaps on it, and there's on two sides around the mainmast. And there's one around the foremast as well. So around this mainmast one here, we've got 80 tons of shot stored in that one alone.
Should we go and have a look?
Yep. And we've got all the different types there.
Oh, we're just going through a piece, an area here, taking a rope away. I feel very privileged. wow. So yeah, this is the shot locker that Tony was just describing. And here are some shot. How many shot have we got down there?
I don't know what the exact number is, 80 tons. So at Trafalgar, Victory fired 28 tons of shot in 4.5 hours, which out of a total of 120 tons, so she still had plenty left, although she was pretty battered by that stage. 28 tons, it's like 3,500 rounds of shot she fired,
right,
just over. So I couldn't give you the maths of that.
And how do you get this up to the gun decks? Are you literally just carrying them one by one?
Yeah, so above us on each side of the shot lockers, so next to the bin lid here, where we can look up through the ship.
Yeah, so we're looking up through the gratings here up to the deck above.
So we can take these gratings, go all the way up to the very top of the ship, to the quarter deck and the waist. So we can take the gratings out, and then you'd literally lower rope net baskets down to here. Guys in here will put the shot into those, they'll be hauled up to the decks that size shot is required on, and then there'll be guys on the decks to take it from the net baskets, the rope baskets, sorry, and then place them into the shot garlands around the ship on the required decks, and obviously that's continuously going on through the battle.
So slightly back-breaking work, but you're kind of safe down here, aren't you?
A little bit. We know of some ships that took damage below the waterline at Trafalgar, and after the battle, Victory had something like about 190 tonnes of water extra that had come in through the sides of the various damaged parts of the ship. So there would have been a lot extra water down here towards the end of the battle. But you're a lot safer, especially compared to the upper decks of Victory, where the most casualties were taken at Trafalgar.
Yeah, very good. Fascinating stuff, Tony. Let's walk along to the aft hold so we'll be able to peek through.
Yeah, most people don't realise it's here, so that the hold of Victory is set into two sections. As we go back towards the aft of the ship, we have a wall here that separates the two, and there's a little window just down here through the netting. You can look.
I'm going to have
it.
to kneel down. We've the ceiling's got much lower, and right, okay. And so this is a dark area. I can see the footings of the mizzenmast there.
Yep, it's only, I mean, the window we're looking through is only about, you know, a foot square. But you can see in the hold, because it's the aft part of the hold of the ship, you can see how it actually starts to rise up. And that's generally drier than the rest of the ship. So things like your bread, you know, your flour, anything that needs to be kept drier than the rest of the stores is all put in this aft part of the hold here. But as I said, most people miss it because it's just this tiny little window to look through. And as you said, we're kneeling down now to peer through the netting.
Yeah, braced by a couple of bits of scaffolding. What's going on there?
Yeah, so obviously the ship's had a lot of movement issues and settling issues over the years with the old cradle. And this has helped supporting the ship while the work's being undertaken now to reinforce her. The new cradle underneath is finished, but that's actually helping to brace her while the rest of the work continues for the next however many years.
Now, obviously, this would have been very, very dark down here. We've got some artificial lanterns. So how would this have been lit?
So, yeah, they would bring the lanterns down as they need them.
And how do they, what were the lanterns? They were just a tallow candle?
Yeah, so lanterns, tallow candles. You've got a metal framework with slats in it, and then you have your thin sheath of horn inside, which is how they get the name lanterns. And the thin sheath of horns inside just allow the light to spread, but obviously reduces the immediate fire risk. But it would have been very damp, very smelly down here, because obviously all the water that leaks in through the ship, whether through the gun ports or through battle damage or just through rain and sprays, it comes down through the shingle, which almost acts like a filter, and then the water collects around the bilge pumps. But of course, all the dirt and detritus and horrible stuff. So it's going to be very, very fragrant, to say the least.
Fragrant, I like. Well, brilliant. Let's see if we can move up a deck. So we're walking towards the bows now, and then up a companionway ladder. So we're taking ourselves up to another deck, but also one which is still below the waterline.
Yes. Still below the waterline here. Just undo the ropes.
Okay, so this feels much more lived in. What is this?
So we're at the front end of the ship here on the orlop deck, which is short for overlapping deck. And at this end of the ship, we actually have the various compartments for things like the carpenter and the other warrant officers, like the bosun, for example. But we also have two passages here in front of us, the very centre line of the ship. There are two passages with large heavy rings and bolts on them. These would be locked at all times, apart from when you're fighting or loading gunpowder or practicing. And this captain would release the keys for this. The left-hand one leads down to the light room. So in the grand magazine below us, there's 35 tonnes of gunpowder stored down there. But obviously, you've got to be very careful with fire and gunpowder. It don't go together very well. So this one here, there's a inside the grand magazine. There's a small room with blast shutters on and glass protective panels, and the lights are lowered into that room. So this one, left-hand column passage, takes you through to there, and the right-hand passage here takes you through to the magazine itself. And again, heavily locked, heavily bolted doors, marine guards at all times. There's a zinc tray that lines the bottom of each of these passages. That'd be filled with an inch and a half of water during battle or during movement of gunpowder. So any specks of gunpowder are washed off from the sailors' shoes and feet, etc., so we're not traipsing gunpowder around the ship as well. And we also, one of these corridors also leads to the small arms and the armoury at the very front of the ship, because obviously you don't want the general crew having access to the armoury when they don't need to. So that would lead through here as well. On the right, this cabin here, we've got the carpenter's cabin. William Bunce was the carpenter at Trafalgar. You'll notice we've got lanterns again, but the lanterns are set just outside the room with a little glass panel that allows the lanterns to shine light into the room. Because if you're working with wood, you're going to have lots of sawdust highly flammable combustible material. So by keeping the light outside of the room, then it reduces the risk of
fire. My brain was slowly struggling to work out what the point of that would have been, but obviously it'll go up, won't it? Yeah.
But the other thing to note, at Trafalgar, the carpenter on board Victory at Trafalgar was William Bunce. He was 6'7". For those obviously you can't see on the podcast, yeah. I'm on a good day, I'm 5'10.5", and that's a very good day. My shoulders are just reaching the lower beam, so my head's hitting the ceiling.
Well, not many people know this, but I am in fact 6'7", and I'm finding it very difficult indeed to be here. Just one carpenter? You can't just have had one carpenter.
Yeah, he's got one carpenter, and then he's got his mates with him, carpenter's mates with him as well, so they assist him. All of it's important to note as well, because we're below the waterline, all of the various cabins that are on this deck, there's actually walkways behind all of the cabins. So if there is damage, rather than having to empty the contents of the cabin to get to the hull, there's actually a clear passage to the hull on the entire level of this deck. Mm. So we can go around this side and you can have a peer down.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So we've got ourselves a protected, gated passageway here. And you can actually look down, and now we're looking at, like, on the right-hand side, we're looking at the starboard side of the hull,
yeah.
On the inside, obviously, and then on the left-hand side, we're looking at the back of the cabins. So you've got these carpenter's walks all the way round on this ship, on this level, on the orlop deck. So again,
Give you access to the hull if there's a problem.
Yes, you can inspect twice a day, the carpenter would as well, just to make sure for checkings, and also obviously you do your checkings of your bilge water levels and stuff as well. But yeah, it's just for ease of access, although, I mean, it's probably, what, 4, maybe 5 foot wide? Yeah. Not exactly a lot of space for working in to fix a hull.
No. And also makes you realise how difficult the job of being a ship's carpenter would be. There is a great deal of timber here, and almost none of it is a straight angle or a straight line. It's all kind of beautifully curved. Very organic, it feels.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they say 6,000 trees for the building of Victory. The Admiralty, on average, are building one roughly every 6 to 7 years. Obviously, that ramps up in wartime and slows down in peacetime. And you're looking for the shapes in the trees. So the ship's knees. So you've got the beam that comes up at a right angle that helps support the deck above and come into the side of the hull. So it's like an inverted L shape, effectively. You're looking for that shape in the tree when you're cutting it down. So you've got the trunk will be coming up to form part of it, and where the branch comes out, that gives you the L shape for where you're cutting. So you do have quite a bit of wastage on the trees, but you are looking, 6,000 trees or so.
Amazing. Right, let's carry on down. So we're going down one of these carpenter's walkways. There's some grating on the right with some of the biggest ropes I've ever seen in my entire life.
So we've got the cable locker here. So this is where the anchor cables come. We are on rope, we're not on iron yet. So these are rope ones. We actually carry 14 different ropes for the anchors as required, different thicknesses. The smallest ones are 7 inches diameter, 7 inches circumference, 7 inches circumference. The largest ones are 23.5 inches circumference.
I mean, they're the size of the trunk of a small tree.
Yes, it's just colossal. And they're 100 fathoms long, 600 feet long.
Yeah, think something like a silver birch. That's roughly how big these things are. And I mean, almost impossible to pick up unless you've got a very large amount of people.
Yeah, so, I mean, dry it's about 5 tonnes. Wet, you're looking possibly as much as 7 or 8 tonnes if it's been in the water, the largest ones for a long time. To bring the main anchor on Victory, and she carries 7 anchors, but to bring the main anchor on board from a full cable length, you're looking at somewhere close to 400 of the crew in total. You've got 260 men just on the capstan. So around about 400 of the crew, somewhere between 4 and 4.5 hours to bring the full length up.
Mm. Amazing. amazing they could actually even conceive of doing something like that, let alone do it. And then they probably could do it under pressure as well.
Yeah, it's a well-practiced task. You obviously have the options of slipping and cutting the anchor. So if you are caught by surprise, you can't ask the French to just hold on for 4.5 hours, guys, while we bring the anchor up. So cutting the anchor is, as they say, it's literally cutting that 23.5-inch circumference.
How would you cut that? I mean, I have no idea. You need a saw.
Yeah, or if you've got a little bit more time, you can slip the anchor, which is where you put it onto a smaller rope with a float on. You can sail off, and then hopefully if you win the battle or survive, you can come back. The float will tell you where the anchor is.
Obviously, very, very valuable things, anchors. You can't just be leaving them willy-nilly. How many anchors on board?
7 anchors, ranging from 1/4 ton, the kedge anchor, the smallest one, up to the largest, which is around about 4.5 tons. And we carry 2 identical copies of that one, because if you lose that one, that's the one that's going to stop us in the worst storm. So you need a spare copy of that one.
Spare of the biggest one.
That's 16.5 tons of anchors in total.
Wow. Amazing. Right, let's carry on through. Clambering over a sailor's chest. I'm sure that wouldn't be put there when we were at sea. That's a hazard, even I can spot that.
Yeah, that's more for keeping the public on the route, because we have a one-way route through Victory to make sure the public can see as much as possible. I mean, 85% of the ship's open to the public, so it is all about trying to keep making sure they come through safely.
Past a couple of hammocks or cots, and we'll talk about those, I think, on the decks above. Let's carry on through here.
We're heading towards the aft of the ship, and we've come to the aft cockpit. So down here you've got lots of high value stores at this end. So we've got lieutenant stores, captain stores, surgeon stores, surgeon's office. The rooms have all got bars on the windows, and everyone commonly mistakes this for a prison cells or brigs. We don't have a brig or a prison cell on Victory. We have iron bars we can chain them to on the upper gun deck. But it's to allow air and light to circulate through the ship. As we said, we're below the waterline, and you need to keep the stalls dry. We've also got purser's office, purser's supplies, and supplies for the Marines.
So what sort of high-value stores are we talking about?
Well, officers bring their own furniture, their own supplies on board, so they'll be storing those down here. And then obviously the surgeon's got his medicines, which need to be locked up. We also have one that's got an extra bar across it, locking it, which goes straight to the aft of the ship. And that's where your spirit stores would be. Ah. So you're going to have a Marine guard down here at all times as well.
Yeah, I'd be spending a bit of time in there, I think. And then there's a pretty gruesome table here. What's going on here?
Yeah, so the sick bay in normal operations is up on the upper gun deck, where it's light and breezy. But in battle, obviously that's in the way of the guns. So in battle, the surgeon comes all the way down, 4 levels down to the orlop deck. He sets his table out up here in front of us, sets his tools out. And in battle, the injured men come down. There's a set of stairs to the left of us. The men would come down those ladders there. And they would literally line up on this in front of this table, and it's first come, first served. There's no real triage. It is first come, first served. And you'll be put onto the table. You'd have your operations, whatever treatment you need, done on the table while everyone else is standing there watching, waiting for their turn. And then you'd either be sent back up, depending on how serious the wound is, or you'd be sent back over to the side to hopefully survive the battle.
I should just say that the surgeon's tools are laid out in front of me, and to give you a sense of what we're looking at here, one of them is a chisel, and the other one is a saw. So not perhaps the delicateness that you might suspect. What are these curvy ones?
Those are urethra probes. If your sailors have been in port and have picked something up, they shouldn't have, disease infection-wise. They're long, thin spikes that will be inserted through the urethra, just for gentlemen, obviously. They'll be used to scrape it out. I mean, growing up in Portsmouth, I first came on Victory in 74, and we've always had sailors' tales growing up and stuff. But when I was a young teenager, the threat was always the umbrella, which was what later it developed into, which was an umbrella-type system that was inserted up. The umbrella's opened, and then that scrapes everything out, and then you'll have mercury sulfide injected afterwards but we've got to remember, we are very civilized by 1800. We know that alcohol thins the blood, so you're not given a shot of rum or a strong drink to drink before an operation. If you survive and it's scabbed over and clotted, you might get some rum later on, but you won't get any pain relief before an operation. We do carry small amounts, or some of the ships carried small amounts of laudanum on board, but you wouldn't use that on a dying man, which seems harsh, but it would be a waste of resources. And also for an amputation, it's easy to do an amputation because it's a clean cut. You're in control of the wound rather than trying to repair fragments and lots of smaller bits of damage. By doing a clean cut, you've got one clean wound that's easier to maintain and repair. And we're actually sewing the blood vessels up after the operation. We're not cauterizing them at this stage in history, and we're not dipping them in tar. So very civilized by 1805. So using silk thread to sew the blood vessels up.
Mm. And that had its own problems as well, though, didn't it? You could get bits of thread caught.
Yes, yeah, and when Nelson had his right arm amputated, the blood vessels are used to dangle out from underneath outside of the stump, and they're used to help provide the drains. And one of those got infected effectively with Nelson, and he gave it a sharp couple of tugs until it finally came out after a couple of months, and the pain that he'd been suffering from it went within a couple of days. Mm. Nelson, when he had his arm amputated, now how much bravado there is in this or not, he said the worst thing about his amputation wasn't the amputation itself, it was the fact that the sharp knife to do the initial cuts and cut through the tendons was cold.
Well, there you go.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be complaining about that, I think. Fantastic. Well, that's given us a lovely little tour of these lower decks. Now, I think we should go and find out a little bit about the work that's being done on here.
Okay.
Off we go. Rosie, so we're back up on the Orlop deck, and you were going to tell me a little about the conservation work that's going on these lower decks.
Yes, so this area we're looking at is a really, let's say, soggy area. So it's directly below the middle gun deck starboard entrance, where rain just comes in because it's open. And we also get the southwesterly prevailing wind and rain blowing in this direction as well, so the whole starboard side does suffer, but also water can come in not just down the way but sideways through the joints.
Wow.
in the planking. So basically we've got areas here where over time we've just had a lot of water coming in. And that has encouraged fungus to grow. And then that in turn weakens the timbers and allows deathwatch beetle to eat the timbers. So we have some pieces which the conservators are working on at the moment, where they're stripping off paint so we can see the amount of rot present. What we're going to do during phase one of our overall conservation works is we're removing external planking, but we're also strengthening the ship by repairing the structural pieces of the ship that support the hull. So we're sort of doing not only planking, but also structural pieces. We're going to either stitch in new pieces or maybe remove whole areas. We're going to save as much as we can. This Orlop deck, a lot of the beams are a mixture of 18th and 19th century, so this is one of the oldest parts of the ship, so of course we're going to remove as little as possible.
Yeah.
But anything that is crumbling will get replaced.
Yeah, I can hear banging going on. How many of your team are working on this at the minute?
I think we have a couple of conservators on at the moment. They have these tented areas to protect the public from what we're doing is removing paint, which has years and years of layers of paint, which has lead in it.
Yeah.
So we can't obviously let the public anywhere near any lead. So they're tented off and they're safely being removed. And then we can see what the wood is like underneath.
And do those layers of paint tell you anything about the history of the ship as well?
They absolutely do. Thank you for asking. So they have different pigments that have different dates. So we had a study done by University of Lincoln in 2014. And they did sample little areas throughout the ship. One of the areas on this Orlop deck had a French ultramarine. And that pigment was only available from 1824 onwards. So we knew that that layer of paint must be post-1824. Mm-hmm. And was also an expensive pigment. So because this was a first-rate ship, they didn't mind spending the money. So that shows they, even in store areas, they were still happy to spend money on expensive pigments just to paint.
But they were painting it a French colour. I'm not sure that would have gone down very well.
you can't say it's a French colour. It's just the French pigment.
I see.
Used in any paint in Europe.
So down here, challenging because of all the water and all of the paint. I suppose you have a different conservation challenges as we go up through the ship. And we're going to come back and talk to you, Rosie, a bit more once we've gone up onto the gun decks. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you all so much for listening. If you're interested in naval history and the Battle of Trafalgar in particular, please check out the Mariner's Mirror podcast's YouTube channel, where you can see how we used artificial intelligence and digital artistry to bring to life a plaster cast of Nelson's face that was taken from him before he died, resulting in an astonishing, and most people who've seen it say it's more than a little creepy, likeness of Nelson. Please make sure you find the Mariner's Mirror on Instagram and TikTok and the Society for Nautical Research on Facebook and Twitter. This podcast comes from both the Society for Nautical Research and Lloyd's Register Foundation. You can find the SNR at snr.org.uk, where you can join up, and please do so, it's entirely worthwhile. And the Lloyd's Register Foundation at hec.lrfoundation.org.uk, where you can find out all about their many and fascinating projects to do with maritime heritage. That's it for now. Episodes 2 and 3 of our audio tour of HMS Victory are on their way very soon.
Burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.